Thank you and welcome to our March 28 meeting. If you all rise, please, and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this time, Madam Clerk, would you please read any changes to our agenda?
Yes, you have several changes to today's agenda. Under item B1, that's a letter transmitting plans and specifications, clerk's file, for the construction of pavement areas and reconfigured taxiways and storm drainage at the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. Recommendation is for approval and instructed clerk to give notice of bid opening date set for April 27, 2006 at 3 p.m. Staff is requesting the transmittal and staff report be amended by modifying some financial language. The amended transmittal and staff report pages are attached for your approval. Item B9 is submittal of a resolution calling for an assessment election in Flood Control 1 and 1A and request to approve a budget adjustment in the amount of $21,649. This is in the 3rd and 4th District. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting the transmittal and cover sheet be amended by changing the recommendation to read as follows. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign and instruct clerk to give notice of hearing date set for June 6, 2006 at 9 a.m. The amended transmittal is attached for your approval. Under amended items for board business, item E1, review of county flood control policies, maintenance, and improvement efforts, staff is requesting the staff report be amended to include additional pages, which were inadvertently left out. The additional pages are attached for your review. And also there's a second amendment to item E1, which is the staff report be amended to include an additional page, which was inadvertently left out, and that's attached for your review, and that's for your changes for today.
And I'm assuming those pages were made available to the public at large?
I would assume so.
Okay. Looking for a response from Public Works. As we get to it, we'll see if anybody has come forward to respond to that question. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to our public comment period. Our first request to speak is Mr. Arnold, followed by Mr. Greening.
Thank you, Chairman Cacho and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I want to thank you for your recent vote in support of the Central Coast Grown label for locally grown produce. As Bill Spencer said, starting a label is a baby step, but certainly a step in the right direction. I hope in the future your board will continue to support labeling by voting for labeling of genetically engineered crops. Consumers want this information. I'm sure that the voters of District 2 support labeling. Don't forget majorities in Cambria, Cayucas, Morro Bay, and Los Osos all voted yes on Q, and certainly these people want labeling, but also people who voted no on Q do want labeling. I've talked to several of them. So it wouldn't surprise us that countywide a majority of people in this county want labeling. Even out in San Miguel, I bet if you asked them, they would want labeling of genetically engineered crops. So do consumers want to know if a bacterial toxin is genetically engineered into their corn? I think they do, and I think they deserve to know. Recently, a group of us from SLOGE Free met with the only known local grower of BT sweet corn to discuss labeling. We had a nice discussion. The grower hasn't agreed to label yet. I think your board could use your moral authority. I believe your board could perform a service for consumers in our county by asking the grower to label his BT corn. He might comply with your request. People want to know what is in their food. Please support labeling of genetically engineered crops. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Greening, followed by Mr. Dugan.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Eric Greening, and I definitely share the concerns of the previous speaker. We should all know what we're eating. I do have another topic. In your capacity as Council of Governments board members, you are receiving agendas rife with the news of cutbacks in funds available for the Regional Transportation Improvement Program due to the precipitate increases in the cost of the road and highway projects, which is in turn driven by the huge and continuing increases in the price of energy, steel, and concrete. While it's the COG's business how to deal with impacts on the projects it oversees, there are related issues that need to be addressed by your board. One, to what extent are county road projects and the programming thereof affected by the same cost escalation factors? And two, what is the impact of funding shortfalls and resultant delays of both RTIP and local projects on the assumptions about traffic levels of service and adequacy of mitigation that have been, are being, and will be made specific to county approval of the countless projects that add traffic to our roads? In other words, are we falling further and further behind and fated to continue doing so as long as existing policies collide with new realities? Do we need to change the way we calculate levels of severity in our resource management system? Are the current findings legitimate? I would urge you to schedule this item for a study session, and when we do so, we should plan to invite staff from the Council of Governments, as well as our own Public Works, Planning Department, and Environmental Division. A policy issue we need to grapple with is whether we should shift more emphasis from capacity increases to maintenance of existing pavement. If energy costs, as seems likely, continue to escalate, genuine transportation modal shift could finally occur, leading to reduced demands for capacity while deterioration of existing pavement will continue to occur. Fixing that deterioration becomes dramatically more expensive if not caught in time. Please agendize a study session where these issues can be discussed and where needed policy changes can be set for future hearings. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, followed by Ms. Thacker.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos, Outreach Committee member, Water Committee alternate, and candidate for the Los Osos CSD. I was going to speak about something very cheery today, but after seeing the headlines in the Telegraph Tribune, I'd like to say that they practice yellow journalism, and they print with headlines things that upset people on purpose. To go on with this comment, there's something happening in Los Osos, and that something's called progress. Regardless of what others may say, there is a forward movement towards the wastewater treatment facilities. Negotiations are ongoing for the update of the facilities report, and by August, a site and system recommendations will be presented to the district board. Though it's been an uphill battle, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Still, there are those who would try to derail the district's efforts to comply with the Regional Water Quality Control Board resolutions, but the district is now on a fast track. The district found a way to keep solid waste costs down, and they saved the residents 3.33% on an expected price hike. The upgrade and repair of one of the district's water tanks is complete. Revenues of the community services are on solid and solid ground. I recently spoke at the Regional Water Quality Control Board hearing and found that the board and the staff were very receptive towards what I had to say. They also had a presentation for their vision of the future, and I found it to fit into the plans of this current LOCSD. And it has a wastewater water reuse and egg exchange, as well as wetlands, the creation of wetlands involved in it. I believe as time goes by and this antagonistic relationship is replaced by communications and cooperation, this common goal of compliance will be realized. But it takes all parties to achieve this goal, and if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. It's my goal to mend fences and to create bridges of communication with all concerned. I will rely on higher authority to guide me and look to the policies and codes to qualify that guidance. I will separate myself from those who are short-sighted and only seek confrontation. People of the community of Los Osos are tired of the fighting and are unsure of their future. I believe it's time to bring closure to these issues so that Los Osos can come together as a community again, and I am aligning myself with others of like mind. I'm a little upset after reading the Telegraph Tribune. They seem to want to print things that are totally out of line with the vision of Los Osos, and there's no purpose to or reason why they would headline those comments they made about replacing 5,000 septic tanks. We haven't even finished negotiations with the firm that's going to update the facilities report, and they're printing these kind of things. It's totally out of line, and I call that yellow journalism. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Tacker?
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker, and I'm here to do a little damage control from the Tribune myself. Appears that the Tribune wants to choose the sewer for Los Osos. I, as director of the Los Osos Community Services District, cannot choose a sewer for Los Osos. The five-member board cannot choose a sewer for Los Osos. Only the voters of Los Osos can choose their sewer. In 1998, the district was formed with this type of sewer in mind. In 2001, an environmental impact report, Crawford, Moultrie, and Clark, identified this type of sewer as the environmentally superior sewer. An independent analysis of the county's sewer and the solutions group sewer showed that this type of sewer was 50% less damaging to our roads and to our ancient Chumash history. This type of sewer. The sewer that was facing Los Osos and that's now defunct was identified in the project report that our board is updating today by hiring this firm that actually specializes in the old approved sewer for Los Osos by its voters. And they chose a gravity system. We're partially under construction. My job is to take the cost analysis of what's been invested in that system and back, going back to the environmentally superior choice for our community. And I'm going to hash it out and then bring the choices to the voters of Los Osos. I'm angry that the Tribune makes it sound like we don't want a sewer. Los Osos wants a sewer. Every member of its community services district board wants a sewer, and we want a quick solution. We have citizens under cease and desist orders. This is troubling to me. We've asked your board to assist us as designated parties. They're in distress. Some of their health is affected by the pressures of the Regional Water Quality Control Board. It's wrong what's happening. I want to thank you for your time, and I just want you to know that I look forward to meeting with each of you individually over the next few weeks, and I hope that my comments today clarify this is not what's been chosen for Los Osos. We've chosen an engineering firm to get us over the next hurdles. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was my last request to speak under public comment. At this time, I will move to consent agenda. And our first speaker, and maybe the only speaker, is Mr. Getty.
Good morning. My name is Norm Getty, resident of Oceano, member of the Task Force for Zone 11A Advisory Committee. Chairman Asajjan and members of the board, there's some of us who jumped out in the rain today to simply appear once again by raise of hands, show our support for the continued direction and positive directions in the Zone 11A process. We'd like to state today our continued appreciation for the commitment of this board, the contribution of county staff, and the immense investment of volunteer hours toward this project. We look forward to a local solution. We look forward to local control and a remedy that's good for everybody. Today we're here to simply encourage and support your affirmative vote on the item before you today to call for the Prop 218 election that would be conducted come June. So with that, I'll be seated, and thank you once again for your time. And
Mr. Getty, since everybody took their time to drive here in the water, in the rain, why don't we ask them to stand up so we can recognize them?
Okay.
They're the hardworking members of the community.
This is a small representation of the larger group, but they took the time to come out this morning to say thank you.
And thank you for all your hard work, and we'll move forward with your blessings. Thank you. Mr. Morawski, followed by Mr. Diaz.
Morning. My name is Ray Morawski from the Pomo.
Mr. Morawski, I'm sorry for interrupt. We'll adjust your timer. Your state's flood problems, is this a consent agenda item? There's an F1.
That was my understanding. There was an
okay. And that's for Oceano, and his concerns are in New Pomo. I just want to be sure that I'm calling you at the right time to speak your mind. Why don't we go ahead and we'll figure that out?
Okay. I'm concerned with what will continue to be done in the Napomo area regarding both flooding that's causing both health and property damages. The county, we're thankful, has cleared out some drainage areas on Teft and Avocado, but one of the creeks that continues to cause and did cause severe problems clear back on January 1st was Hemerick Creek, which comes across Thompson Road from Carriage Homes and also severely flooded Burton Street. There were six homes, including the one I'm in, that received a lot of damage. Two of the families have walked away from $500,000 homes because their estimates have gone in excess of $100,000 damage. And to date, we're not seeing anything done to Hemerick Creek. The rains continue today. We're supposed to get a break tomorrow, and then Friday we're supposed to get hit again with more rains. And what we are finding is there's both chemical and human waste being dumped into the creeks, up creek, that's coming down there. Three people are now seeing doctors because of health problems. And our concern is, at one hand, we hear from the county that they cannot go into Hemerick Creek and do anything because they have to have permits from the Department of Fish and Game. And yet the Department of Fish and Game tells us that's nonsense. The county's blowing smoke, that they know that any time there's a creek that's affecting personal lives or property, that they do not have to have permits to go in and correct the problem. Now, people have met. They're trying to be very patient. We're approaching 90 days since the first flood. And again, this morning as I left my residence on Burton Street, several neighbors have spent thousands of dollars putting up cinder-blocked fences to help protect their properties. But again, this morning, like at my home, we had to put up barriers across our driveways that if we do get the rain they're anticipating, the properties are, the land is very saturated at this point, and it's not going to take another 5-inch downpour like we had on January 1st to cause further damage to those homes. And so we're very thankful for what has been done on Teft and Avocado, but there still needs to be something done at Burton, Thompson, where Hemerick Creek comes across. It flooded Thompson Road before, and we're just afraid with all this saturated soil that it's just a matter of time. Houses are going to be wiped out again on Burton. And so we just appreciate anything that can be done to further correct the problem. Hemerick Creek, which runs right under Thompson and Burton, and that's where still there's considerable damage that has not been repaired from January 1st.
Thank you, Mr. Morawski. And I will ask, I don't see anybody from Environmental Health, if our administration can contact Environmental Health to look into the human waste issue, because that's a big red flag, and we'll look into that ASAP. Mr. Diaz? Mr. Morawski, before you leave, you might want to give us your phone number in case our Environmental Health want to have more specifics. They contact you. So if you want to put that on a yellow, one of those yellow slips, and bring it to our administration, to Mr. Edge, and we'll look into it right away. Mr. Diaz.
Yes. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I appreciate all your help, Mr. Cacho, and all of you guys that were involved in helping us clean out our culverts. Highly appreciated, especially by me and the neighbors. We do still have a lot of debris coming off the farmlands. I keep saying this, and I'm being ignored. I feel I'm being ignored. Our problems are silting, as you've all seen coming out of those culverts. A lot of debris. There's some debris up on Upper Haystack that's the size of a semi truck, 40 foot long, 30 feet wide, 10 to 20 feet high, with that black tubing that's haunted us for the last 10 years coming off the farmlands. I want to see that stuff cleaned out. That way we don't have to continually having to be taking these things out of our bridges and being scared to death whether we're going to be flooded or not. I know that it's on farmlands. I know that the county hasn't got a bunch they can do there, but they could at least push the hand of the farmer to take the stuff out of those creeks to prevent more flooding. I've got your survey maps here of when they did the survey. I'd like to show them on here because on these things here, I have marked the areas that have the debris by their names. Can I put this on that?
Please, would a staff member be able to help Mr. Diaz? Mr. Diaz, while we're doing, you continue because your time is going to run out and I want to be able to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Anyway, those are some of the areas. I mean, you can't really see them that good on there, but that I want to show. But also, I want to show a picture of where the water flow runoff came off of De La Sagas Creek and was caught in a culvert and sent it back into those homes that were flooded with a little girl and the parents were flooded during the night while they were asleep. And you guys can see it pretty good from there. But anyway, this has been plugged off, this exit going out into this field, which caused the water to go back up to these tubes and sends it right back into those homes. Why would the farmer plug that off when he knows that we've got flooding problems? At least get it lined up with the county on a way to get it out of there. But no, don't plug it off and cause more problems for the people that live down there off of De La Sagas. You know, I feel that there's a lot of neglect in the farmers participating and helping the town. You know, they can say that they're not having problems with it, but they are. And I'll never go away until these problems are solved.
Okay. We don't want you to go away. And as you know, we were on site. We are working with the local jurisdiction, the Pomo Community Service District. And we have also invited Land Conservancy to help us with some of the permitting. And as Mr. Morawski said, that we can go into the creek anytime we wish to. That is not so. And I say this publicly. The Fish and Games are very good people to work with. And we have worked with them in the past. We will continue to work with them in the future. They're there because they're the ones to allow us to go into the creek when there is a need to. But we're working together with the local jurisdiction to put our heads together as what kind of a cleanup and where the money is going to come from. Mm-hmm. And it could be just as we've done in the community of Oceano, that we have to assess that district. You are in a flood zone, and we need the community support to make that happen. Thank you.
Okay. Am I done? Or?
Yeah, I'm sorry. And Mr. Diaz, everything you show here for us, it needs to be part of the record if you give it to Madam Clerk so it's on record with your...
Okay, yeah, I got another one of these maps.
Please, thank you. Does anybody else wish to comment on the consent agenda items? Seeing none, bring it back to the board members at this time. Ms. Bianchi? Mr. Lentil?
No, sir.
Mr. Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ovid?
No, I...
Entertain a motion at this time?
No, move.
Moved by Supervisor Lentil, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi.
As amended
with the changes. I'll do a roll call. Supervisor Bianchi?
Actually, doing a roll call. Do you want me to do it?
Oh, okay.
Mr. Lentil?
Aye.
This is Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Thank you. I'll take a moment while people are exiting. Would you please pass this forward?
Yeah.
At this time, Madam Clerk, would you please introduce our first item on the agenda, C1?
Item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Nadu Sartell of the Subdivision Review Board's decision to deny a request to divide an existing 198.85-acre parcel into two parcels of 80.2 acres and 118.83 acres each, located on the north side of Almond Drive, approximately 8 miles east of the community of Templeton in the 1st District.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. I didn't quite catch that whole description from the clerk.
We'll have it repeated.
Thank you. In front of you today is a request from the appellant's attorney to continue this hearing. The appellant has changed representation, and the new attorney needs some time to get up on what's been going on the project. We've looked into continuation dates, and from what we understand, the next available date for this hearing is June 13th, and that's the staff recommendation.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to board members for a possible motion to continue this item.
Move to continue June 13th.
Motion by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Should we do a roll call, Madam Clerk? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item, please.
Next item is item D1. This is a discussion regarding the syringe access implementation plan. This item was continued from March 7th, 2006.
Thank you. Would that be Dr. Thomas and the crew?
Good morning, members of the board. Dr. Greg Thomas, health officer, public health administrator. We're back. It's an old saying, we're back. We have worked over the last 3 weeks to develop an implementation plan. Your board directed us to develop that implementation plan. We met with a representative of the Criminal Justice Administrators Association to hear their concerns. That was the representative. There was a committee that was assigned to bring forward the concerns. We discussed ways of dealing with those concerns. We were given a written list of concerns, and we provided a response and offered to further discuss it. Could I have the first slide, please? Go to the slideshow, please. See you up there?
That's you, not her.
We pause for station identification here. Okay.
Make time.
Okay, so we're going to start out with the next slide, please, which is the, if you click the down arrow on the, Marcia, the down arrow on the keyboard. Okay, thank you very much. I'm joined here with Marcia Bollinger, Director of the AIDS Program, and Jason Wells of Drug and Alcohol Services. So the first concern brought forth by law enforcement was how often can people buy syringes under the disease prevention demonstration project, our plan is that an MOU with pharmacies will contain language restricting the sale of syringes to 10 per day. Second concern, drug dealing around syringe exchange sites. We certainly would put in an MOU, will put in an MOU with the syringe exchange program that they take action to whatever action possible to prohibit the buying and selling of drugs in the area around the syringe exchange program. Third is, will equal number of syringes, used syringes, be exchanged for clean ones? Yes, this is a requirement, again, of a MOU. And indeed, in other areas, such as Ventura, there are more syringes turned in than people ask for. Advertisement content, the goal of syringe exchange programs is harm reduction and focus on disease prevention and harm reduction. Will buyers and exchangers have to show an ID? The MOU with pharmacies will include asking for ID if there's a question whether or not the buyer is 18 or older. What will pharmacies charge for needles? That's really up to the pharmacists, but experience in other counties show that the average price is between 75 cents and $1.25 per syringe. Will parolees and probationers have access to syringes? Information will be provided at Syringe Exchange Program informing parolees and probationers that any court order prohibiting their possession of drug paraphernalia does supersede the new law. We have reviewed this with County Council, who concurs on this. Can needles be sold with a sharps container? Yes. We have some HIV prevention funds, which if we buy sharps containers in large bulk, the plan is to provide sharps containers to those who come into pharmacies and come into syringe exchange programs. What about public health data, and who can law enforcement report their concerns to? We will have collection of data such as number of needles sold and exchanged, demographic data from syringe exchange programs and the pharmacy, and there will be somebody from public health and drug and alcohol services to respond to law enforcement concerns. Where will syringe exchange programs be located? We don't have a fixed location at this time. There's a request to require intervention and drug counseling for every exchange or purpose. We will provide educational materials to link people to treatment, and that will be not only in writing but a verbal message. And warm handoffs can be accomplished between the providers and drug and alcohol. Has County Council been consulted? Yes. We've consulted with County Council several times along this journey. Performance measures and monitoring. Syringe Exchange Program must provide quarterly reports to drug and alcohol services that include demographic and geographic information, such as number of participants served, average number of syringes exchanged monthly per participant, number of participants referred for treatment and medical care. Drug and alcohol will conduct at least quarterly site visits, and drug and alcohol services will provide training for syringe exchange program staff. How will it be funded? Well, this fiscal year, there is HIV prevention money from the state for $25,000. These can be used for staffing costs, educational materials, office supplies, but not to purchase syringes. It is expected the Syringe Exchange Program will apply for grant funds to accomplish this. Next slide. Okay. So, the implementation plan, as you can see on your screens, our plan is to contact the pharmacies again regarding this disease prevention demonstration project and sign an MOU, register the pharmacies in this disease prevention demonstration project, which goes through 2010, but is subject to board review, and the board could discontinue that program prior to 2010 if it's so decided. And continue to research and contact other county state programs for best practices. For the syringe exchange program, a lot of similar steps. Sign the MOU with the issues that we've already talked about. Finalize and distribute education and informational brochures about syringe exchange programs. Collect data and report annually to the Board of Supervisors. And public health staff will continue to communicate regularly with law enforcement. Key elements of the syringe exchange MOU, exchange one needle that is used for every clean needle, give exchangers a receipt and or a syringe exchange program identification, distribute disease prevention and treatment options via brochure and verbal oral counseling, distribute sharps containers. Other things that we'll need to do, educate parolees and probationers who are court-ordered not to possess drug paraphernalia that accessing exchange services is an illegal activity, collecting data, make sure that the program advertisements include a health message, and maintain communication with law enforcement, and provide them with site information about where syringe exchange programs will be happening, and attending law enforcement staff meetings as appropriate. I have already mentioned the annual report. The law that went into effect that was supported by the California Narcotics Officers Association requires that the local health officer, that is me at this moment, presents an annual report on the status of the syringe exchange in an open meeting to the Board of Supervisors. This includes relevant statistics on bloodborne infections and associated with needle sharing, law enforcement, administrators of alcohol and drug treatment programs, and other stakeholders and the public are to be afforded ample opportunity to comment. And then it is up to the Board of Supervisors to review that and make further decisions on the program. Now, the Office of AIDS at the state is developing guidance for the annual reports, including some of the aspects of data collection. Key elements of the pharmacy MOU, we've touched on needle purchasers not to exceed 10 per buyer per day. Sharps containers will be provided to pharmacists and public health brochures. Not selling needles to anybody under 18, giving buyers syringe disposal information, collecting data, and giving buyers receipts. Next slide. Why are we doing this? Briefly, I'll repeat some of the information I said 3 weeks ago. Research has shown over and over, indeed, I do have a file that shows over and over and over that access to clean needles does not increase injection drug use population or crime and does not encourage people to use drugs. An independent study convening at the National Institute of Health has showed, concluded that needle exchange does not do this. Connecticut, as we provided information last time, began allowing needle sales, legal sales, and possession of up to 10 syringes in 1992. Needle sharing dropped 40% among injection drug users, and needle stick injuries to law enforcement decreased by 66%, and over 80% of Connecticut pharmacies voluntarily sell physicians over the counter. A detailed study that was published in 2000 shows that 2 years after the syringe exchange program started, there was a very significant decrease in discarded needles. They did this by going through block by block in Baltimore before and after and counting how many syringes they could find in parks, playgrounds, etc., and there was a very significant decrease. Next, why should we do this? Because of the AIDS epidemic, the hepatitis C epidemic. This is a public health crisis. Injection drug users are the second largest group at risk of becoming infected with HIV and AIDS, and injection drug use is a leading cause of heterosexual, female, and prenatal transmission of HIV in California, United States, and Europe. Injection drug use is one of the most prevalent risk factors for new AIDS cases in California, and there is a lack of sterile needles on the streets, and this does promote needle sharing. Next slide. A few statistics. 324 cases of HIV have been reported since HIV became reportable in 2002. In addition, 534 cases of AIDS have been reported since 1983, and more than 28% of AIDS cases were attributed to injection drug use. 36% of women with AIDS in San Luis Obispo County identified injection drug use as a mode of transition, and 1,500 cases of hepatitis C reported since 1996, The CDC estimates that 60% of people with hepatitis C got it through injection drug use. That is 8,976 people in San Luis Obispo County. 46 states allow pharmacies to sell syringes over the counter without a prescription. In conclusion, the success of these programs depend on the ability of injection drug users to access clean needles and on the ability to serve as a bridge to treatment and disease prevention for injection drug users, which relies on trust and not forced referral at each exchange. Is it cost effective? A study in Australia looked at the investment that they made in the entire country of Australia, and for $83 million spent over 10 years from 1990 to 2000, it was estimated between $1.3 billion and $4.2 billion of avoided costs resulted. That is a 15 to 1 to 50 to 1 investment ratio. So for every dollar that they spent, they saved between $15 and $50. I received late yesterday afternoon information from Criminal Justice Association, and it had two prominent arguments. One was something was provided to you from Ventura County Law Enforcement Coordinating Committee, talking through the reasons pro and con of needle exchange. And on page 12, at the end, it says, in conclusion, we have substantial concerns about the needle exchange program proposed for Ventura in the year 2000, that's 6 years ago. However, we, the Law Enforcement Coordinating Committee, we are not opposing it at this time. If early evidence indicates that needle exchange could become a threat to public order or safety, we will take steps to see that the program is discontinued. Ventura, 6 years later, continues to have a syringe exchange program. I spoke to the health officer just before 5 o'clock because that was my opportunity, and they have done annual reviews, and they've become pretty darn ho-hum. Dr. Levin's discussion with the sheriff is that the sheriff says there's no evidence of crime or security issues that have resulted from this program. And law enforcement has not opposed its continuation in Ventura County. In the most recent report, 10,202 syringes in Ventura were turned in, and 8,970 syringes were given out. In other words, 1,232 fewer needles are out on the street that could otherwise be found in parking lots, parks, or other places that could be hazardous to the public. So this has been a success in Ventura County, despite concern by law enforcement that it might not be. Secondly, there's reference to an article that in Montreal and in Vancouver, they showed actually not a decrease in HIV, but actually an increase during a period of time when there was a syringe exchange. The authors of the Canadian study that is quoted here, I quote in an editorial that they wrote, as the authors of the Canadian studies, we must point out that these officials who are saying that HIV might have gone up as a result of this have misinterpreted our research. True, we found that addicts who took part in needle exchanges programs in Vancouver and Montreal had a higher HIV infection rate than addicts who did not. That's not surprising. Because these programs are in inner city neighborhoods, they serve users who are at greatest risk of infection. Those who did not accept free needles often didn't need them, since they could afford to buy syringes in drugstores or a farm supply store. They were also less likely to engage in the riskiest activities. Also, needle exchange programs must be tailored to local conditions. For example, in Montreal and Vancouver, cocaine injection is a major source of HIV transmission. Some users inject the drug up to 40 times a day. At that rate, we calculated the two cities we studied would need each 10 million clean needles a year to prevent reuse of syringes. A study conducted last year and published in The Lancet, a British medical journal, found that in 29 cities worldwide, where programs are in use, HIV infection dropped by an average of 5.8% a year among drug users. In 51 cities that had no syringe exchange plans, drug-related infection rose by 5.9% a year. Clearly, these efforts can work. Clean needles are only part of the solution. A comprehensive approach that includes needle exchange, healthcare, treatment for drug addiction, social support, and counseling is also needed. With that, I'll end the presentation, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Dr. Thomas, should Ventura County and others who support or have the program of needle exchange in place, does that also include the capability of a person over 18 years old to go to a pharmacist and purchase new needles?
Ventura County does not have that program as of yet. This is, again, new legislation. Syringe exchange has been legal as long as there was a determination of a public health emergency for quite a few years, and the pharmacy access program is new, so they have not instituted that program as of yet in Ventura.
And how about the other areas that you were part of your statement that have this program in place? Do they have both programs in place or just needle exchange?
As we said last 3 weeks ago, the number of programs, syringe exchange programs, Mr. Wells, I think it's 14.
As you speak, please give us your name for the record.
The number of counties that have approved pharmacy sales is 14.
And that's Marsha Bollinger.
Marsha Bollinger. The number of syringe exchange programs in the state is 37. But that accounts for that some counties like Humboldt and Los Angeles have more than one syringe exchange program.
My question was, if the other part of the program that you're able to go and buy new needles, is that, do they have that program in place?
Ventura does not yet, though they plan to. Santa Barbara does. And I believe the study that Dr. Thomas was quoting, Montreal, they have both.
Okay. And what is it, the program, when you're able to buy needles, not exchange them, but to purchase, how many and how often?
We're proposing that it be 10 per day maximum, one trip to the pharmacy per day.
Per person?
Yes.
And is there a scientific formula behind it as why a person will need 10 needles a day, new needles a day to purchase?
Part of it is saying that the law says that people should be allowed under this program to purchase up to 10 syringes. The other side of it is if you start saying, well, it'll be every 3 days or 2 days, how is the pharmacy going to keep track? If it's the same day, you've generally got the same staff person there and you can keep track of it. We're not recommending that people sign in and have to keep a track of the actual name, and therefore this seems like the most reasonable way of keeping track of it. Secondly, as it's said in this literature, depending on what drugs are used, cocaine, for example, people may inject up to 40 times a day, according to this article.
But that one same person can go every day and buy up to 10 needles?
Yes.
Would that raise a red flag for a pharmacist or us?
I doubt that most people are going to. I mean, that is not the experience that people have had in other counties. The state staff who have been monitoring other pharmacies around the state have data that say that an average pharmacy sells 2 to 7 syringe sales a day. That has not been an experience in other counties under this program.
Thank you. Any questions from supervisors? I don't see any names, and I'll go to the public at this time. Our first speaker is Kathy Lewis, followed by Eddie Kahn.
Hello again. I'm Kathy Lewis, Benefits Counselor with the Slow Hep C Project. We are a local agency dedicated to meeting the needs of people living with hepatitis C and increasing public awareness through educational outreach throughout the San Luis Obispo County. I am back to reemphasize our need as a community to enact a needle exchange program. Hepatitis C, the silent epidemic, is a disease of the liver which is spread by direct blood-to-blood contact. People that shoot drugs have a very high infection rates, sometimes as high as 90%. About 75% of people infected are likely to progress to chronic liver disease with the virus in their bloodstreams for more than 6 months. Up to 10% suffer significant liver damage, and some of whom will require liver transplant. It can take up to 25 years or more for liver to progress to this stage, but hepatitis C is already the number one reason for liver transplants in our country. Liver transplants can cost well over $200,000. Other medical options for hepatitis C can create large medical expenses with multiple doctors and hospital visits, diagnostic tests, and very expensive prescription drugs and treatments. As a counselor working with hundreds of clients dealing with this disease, I have seen the effects of treatment which involves long-term chemotherapy. Commonly, treatments cause debilitating side effects which include severe anemia, depression, suppressed immune system, and many, many more. Interferon injections are taken weekly for a minimum of 6 months, but more likely up to a year. Since the side effects of treatment are so debilitating, many patients are unable to finish the whole course of treatment. Only 50% of the patients making it through the whole course of treatment actually clear the virus. Others may be placed on maintenance doses of interferon to reduce liver damage. It is a fact needle exchange programs stop transmission of bloodborne diseases like hepatitis C. Most needle exchange programs operate on a one-for-one basis, so they also help reduce the presence of infected needles in playgrounds, streets, and trash receptacles, thus protecting our children, sanitation workers, first responders, law enforcement, and others from accidental needle sticks. I in no way believe that we should stop our efforts to decrease the use of illegal drugs in our community. However, if we can prevent those that are struggling with their addictions from unknowingly receiving or continuing to spread this virus, this county will save hundreds of thousands of dollars on future medical expenses. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Khan, followed by Sheriff Hedges.
My name is Edie Khan, and I'm the Executive Director of the AIDS Support Network and Slow Hep C Project. Our agency provides supportive services to people living with HIV, AIDS, and hepatitis C throughout the county. Once again, I'm here to support a much-needed syringe exchange program for the citizens of our county. I'd like to start off with a quote. An impressive body of evidence suggests powerful effects from needle exchange programs. The number of studies showing beneficial effects on behaviors such as needle sharing greatly outnumbers those showing no effects. There is no longer doubt that these programs work, yet there is a striking disjunction between what science dictates and what policy delivers. Can the opposition to needle exchange programs in the United States be justified on scientific grounds? Our answer is simple and emphatic: no. Studies show reduction in risk behavior as high as 80%, with estimates of a 30% or greater reduction in HIV in IV drug users. The cost of such programs is relatively low. Such programs should be implemented at once. And that's a quote from the National Institutes of Health Consensus Panel. The last time this topic was discussed at the board, you heard quite a few statistics, and today you're hearing more. As a refresher, I would like to remind you that the Centers for Disease Control states that dirty needles are the culprit for over half of the new HIV cases in our country, and that 61% of the cases diagnosed in women now are due to IV drug use. Another refresher, the cost to treat just one of these new cases of HIV is at least $120,000 and rising, since those diagnosed are living longer. and that if one newly diagnosed person has no medical insurance, their expenses are picked up by Medi-Cal, Medicare, or CMSP, all government-funded agencies. Please weigh that $120,000 versus the dollar or so for a new syringe. A needle exchange program provides us with much more than a monetary gain, however. There is evidence that syringe exchange programs report increased referral to drug treatment services, including those services that aim to help injecting drug users stop injecting. This may have an additional benefit in that as a result of such referrals, some drug users at least may cease to inject, thereby reducing the risk of other kinds of drug-related harm. A syringe exchange program also helps clear a path for IV drug users to access agencies like the AIDS Support Network, Slow Hep C Project, or Mental Health. More importantly, as we talked about a few weeks ago, we must weigh the personal cost of someone contracting HIV or Hep C. What a heavy burden it will be to know that we have a means of HIV and Hep C prevention at our fingertips and that we choose to keep putting off the use of this life.
Summarize, your time is up.
I just want to remind us all that we have this opportunity right here. We have funding for it that we may lose if we don't act quickly. And as a board, I hope that you support this program.
Thank you, ma'am. Sheriff Hedges, followed by District Attorney Jerry Shea.
Good morning. Thank you. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Corner. Chief Joe Cortez from the city of Pismo Beach asked me to pass on his apologies. He's still dealing with the aftermath of some events over the last 2 weeks, unable to be here, but he has provided you with a letter that addresses concerns from the Criminal Justice Administrators Association. 3 weeks ago, your board asked us to take a look at an implementation plan, and I can tell you that we are making progress. We've had some discussion with various folks, Dr. Thomas and others, and we have come to some resolution on some issues. The bottom line for today is that we do need more time. Ventura does have a program in place. Once again, a needle exchange, syringe exchange program that is working because they do have an implementation plan. They do have something working. We've heard today that there will be an MOA with pharmacies. We've yet to see what the MOA actually will include. The speakers this morning, and I think the reality is that people see a very a positive benefit from a needle exchange program. I've not heard one comment supporting, though, adding tens upon tens upon tens of needles and syringes uncontrolled into circulation within this county through the pharmacy pilot project. I do not believe that that San Luis Obispo County needs to be a pilot project for such a program. We've heard of the numbers that are involved. However, we don't know how many of those over the past 23 years have been may have been front-loaded numbers. We don't know what the numbers are within the last year, within the last 2 years, or within the last 5 years. So we have no basis at this point in time with an implementation plan to determine what our results are going to be. How do we determine if this program is actually effective here in San Luis Obispo County? We're in contact with the gentleman who operates the needle exchange, syringe exchange program down in Santa Maria. And he told Under Sheriff Bolts that they have a limit of 100 needle syringe combinations at one particular time. They will accept more than 100 used kits from clients, but will only give them 100 back in that exchange. And he has an issue with the exemption for pharmacy sales that it does not provide for the comprehensive intervention that he claims his organization does with his clients. So we still need some more time to figure out how the programs, and there are two programs that were approved by your board. We're not asking that your board take any action at this time to withdraw that approval, but we are asking that we be provided additional time to work out the many details so that San Luis Obispo County remains a safe county. Thank you.
Sheriff Hedges, has there been any effort from our law enforcement agency to look at the implementation program that Ventura County has And if that's an acceptable from your agency?
Actually, that's what we started to do. We first tried to identify the 37 counties that were mentioned 3 weeks ago. As you know now, that there's only 14 counties. We're in the process of contacting those counties. We're beginning with Santa Barbara County, actually, when we had some other distractions going on within the department and weren't able to contact all of them. But we would like that opportunity to continue to determine how these successful programs, what makes them successful, and determine why some, such as one Northern California county, is talking about defunding their program. We don't have those details yet.
Before you go, we have Supervisor Patterson with a question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sheriff Hedges, how much time do you anticipate needing to work through some of these issues and come up with an implementation plan?
I would say, I would ask that we be provided no longer than a six-month cap to have the implementation program, MOA, and all of the supporting documentation completed and back to your board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Mr. Shea? That'll be followed by Chief Cassidy.
Good morning, Jerry Shea, District Attorney. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you about this particular issue. I believe that all of us speaking on this issue today would agree that the best hope for IV drug users in our county is intervention, drug treatment, and rehabilitation so as to avoid even the possibility of their being infected with AIDS. And I'm aware that the board 3 weeks ago authorized the health agency to develop these two programs that are before you today for further consideration. In light of the additional information that the law enforcement community has brought forward to you, though, I would ask you to reconsider that decision today. In the alternative, I would ask you to consider appointing a commission or a committee to look into both of these programs in more depth and then report back to you consistent with what Sheriff Hedges was saying. First of all, these programs are not the direction that the state of California is going in at this time. Originally, your materials included a reference to 37 counties having adopted a needle exchange program, whereas the actual number, as we know now, is actually 14 counties out of the 58 in California. Secondly, and I think maybe we haven't touched on this yet, under the pharmacy program, there is no limit to the number of pharmacies from which a person may purchase hypodermic needles without a prescription each day. Certainly, they can purchase 10 from one pharmacy and go to another pharmacy, and that pharmacy wouldn't know about the earlier purchase. By definition, therefore, this program will increase the inventory of available needles in circulation in our county. Finally, I guess from a public policy standpoint, balancing the public health issues and the public safety issues, I would ask you to reconsider implementing these two programs because I believe they're of questionable proven success in these different areas. I think there needs to be some studies by this county in terms of what the other counties in this state are doing. You've got 14 other counties that have implemented this. I think you need to look at those 13 or 14 other counties and see how it's going there. As I said, while intervention and treatment are the goals, I don't believe that these goals are accomplished by enabling people to use illegal drugs more safely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chief Cassidy, followed by Mr. Darrington.
Thank you, Chairman Nakajian and Board. I think we have two issues here and one that need to be looked at totally separate. One is the needle exchange program, the other is the pharmacy program. There apparently at this time are not the statistics to declare a countywide health emergency based on the numbers alone that have been provided by the health department and the numbers that we've seen. Without a countywide declared emergency, it seems premature to implement a program that impacts all cities and all jurisdictions within the county without proper dialogue and input from those cities as it relates to community philosophy, community buy-in, community support of such programs. And there has been no effort to bring the cities on board to discuss these issues. My city alone, I've had dialogue with my council, and those are the concerns that they have, is that they have not had the opportunity to see the program, to go through the program and see how it may impact our city financially and from a health perspective. That being said, the fiscal impacts are listed as minimal in or none in the proposed the proposal that came before you. We believe that the fiscal impacts not only for this program in and of itself will occur, but also to other jurisdictions and other agencies throughout the county, such as the medical response. So we have medical people responding to drug overdoses now with the number of needles that are out there. Whether or not we'll be responding more than we currently are from a medical standpoint is uncertain. Law enforcement responds significantly to current drug usage throughout the county, and at this point in time, we're not certain whether or not that will increase. However, if we're putting more needles on the street without provisions for retrieval, safe retrieval of those needles, one can come to the opinion or observation that those needles are going to be somewhere in the community, whether they're discarded or whether they're in the homes where children are or whatever the case might be. Contaminated needles will be out there without a provision for retrieving those needles. That is of concern to us. One of the other issues that I have with the proposal is the contracting out the service, contracting it out to a non-public agency to provide needles or to take the needles in exchange. Where the location of those exchanges might be, what neighborhoods will the exchanges take place in, what business districts, the background of the employees that we're contracting with, what is their criminal history or criminal background as it relates to drug usage or drug sales. And also the lack, as mentioned earlier, the lack of county involvement in the ability to provide education, referrals, and counseling to these folks at the time the exchanges are going on. I believe that
Jeff Cassidy, would you please summarize?
Yes, I will. Thank you. I think at this point in time, it's premature to implement the exchange and pharmacy program as presented to you until we can get further input.
Thank you, sir. Sir Darrington?
Good morning. My name is Buck Darrington. I spoke, I guess, 3 weeks ago, also before this body. I'm Director of Education and Prevention for Pacific Pride Foundation. We are the organization that actually, who are subcontracted to provide the needle exchange program to Santa Barbara County. We have two locations, both of which are in business districts. In fact, our agency that we work in, out in Santa Maria is directly next door to the Alano Club, which is a Narcotics Anonymous. We even have a clean, sober living environment right across the street from us. So we work right in the area where we have issues with respect to drugs and alcohol. There was a comment made earlier that I had made a comment to Under Sheriff Bolts that I'm concerned about the needles coming back from those that have been purchased. The only issues I have with that is a simple reason that our county, our health jurisdiction right now, currently does not have that program in place. They're looking at it. The County Board of Supervisors are examining the idea. Since it was a law that was passed by Governor Schwarzenegger, it's not something that has really been on the forefront of our agenda, but we, of course, are taking a look at that. One of the issues, too, that has been said in the past is the disposal of the needles. This is an example of what we give to our clients. It's a simple $2 Sharps container. And what's so great about this is that one of the things we impress upon our needle users is not to carry them on their person. That should they be stopped by law enforcement, that they would not be carrying the needles on their person should they ever get patted down. They're actually stored in these little $2 containers, which they bring with them when they come in for exchange. And when they're given a receipt, and this is what they take with them, and this is what they bring back. So it's actually safer for our community. And the only thing we're concerned about right now with the actual purchase of the $10 needles is a feedback loop of how they would get them back off the street. And again, this is a program that has not yet been implemented in our county. So it's not something we could even speak about at this point. But our exchange has been very successful. We always take in more needles than we give out. And as an example, last year it was over 200,000 needles we took off the street. And we only gave out approximately 135,000 needles. So we're actually seeing more needles coming off the street than we're actually giving out. And that's really, I think, all I have to say at the moment.
But thank you.
Thank you.
That was the last request to speak. Does anyone else wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Dr. Thomas, a couple of questions. The resemblance of our implementation program, similarities with others, did we
look at others and put something in place, or this is our own only, unlike others? And the other one, the statements were made by many who spoke. I haven't heard the word exchange and not necessarily the ability to buy needles. Should we somehow separate those two issues, makes it clarifies the air, and or they need to stay together? What's your opinion?
As we have put together an implementation plan, I'm sorry, Dr. Thomas, Public Health, as we put together the implementation plans for these two programs, I acknowledge that they are two different programs, but I believe they are complementary, although, first question is, have we looked at other programs as we have developed implementation plans? Absolutely. We've looked at Santa Barbara in particular, since they're our neighbor, and many of our county residents go across county line to do their syringe exchange in Santa Maria. As a matter of fact, Mr. Darrington said 50% of the – oh, 15, excuse me. I missed the voice between 15 and 50. So a significant number of the syringes that they exchange in Santa Maria come from San Luis Obispo County. I'm aware of, I have Ventura's implementation plan. We've looked at Santa Cruz and Jason and Marsha, I'll let them speak. Could we separate these two issues? Yes, I think we could. As it has been pointed out, this pharmacy sales disease prevention demonstration project is a newer phenomenon. It is going well throughout the state, but frankly, the volume everywhere when you have a syringe exchange program and pharmacy sales. The pharmacy sales is a pretty small part. It's the tip of the iceberg. The 85% of the iceberg is the syringe exchange program. The pharmacy is for those people who you still want to prevent disease transmission, but they're not going to be caught dead walking up to a syringe exchange program. Probably your white collar drug users. If you want to label it, it's the people who can afford to go to pharmacies and don't want to be identified as walking up to a syringe exchange program. I would be happy to separate those, try and get syringe exchange program going faster. It is certainly more common in this state. Not only that, but as Edie Kahn, and you might want to ask her some more detailed questions, that there are HIV prevention funds that will get this program going this year that will allow purchase of the sharps containers that will hold us for a long time, but no guarantee that there will be adequate funding to do all these things in terms of setting up the program and purchasing sharps containers next year. So we would rather front load this syringe exchange program, and if it means the pharmacy program comes along later, the pharmacy program comes along later. The other thing is, yes, we're by all means want to work with law enforcement as we move forward. We've stated that throughout here. But putting a time period of, well, come back 6 months later, that's a long time.
So as far as the funding goes, and we'll, my question, funding is available for this fiscal year, but we don't know in the future where the money will come from. And if the money doesn't come from someplace else, are we then to be put on the spot to follow through the expenses?
Jason Wells, Drug and Alcohol Services. The potential provider of the exchange program has committed to doing the program on a volunteer basis if there's no funding, and they're going to continue to seek funding from grant sources.
Thank you. Supervisor Bianchi?
Yeah, I have two questions. Has the Criminal Justice Administrator's Task Force met yet, and if so, how many people attended? I mean, how many meetings have there been?
I can't answer how many times the Criminal Justice Administrator's has met. We did meet with one representative who had been designated. I believe that there were two people selected from the Criminal Justice Administrator's to represent CJAA and discussions with the public health department.
Okay, so my thought is the length of time it would take to, you know, come to an agreement with why that question. And in the regular sale of syringes from the pharmacies, I would assume that the pharmacies would be selling Sharps containers at the same time.
Our plan is not to have the pharmacies sell Sharps containers. Our plan is to use HIV prevention funds to buy them in bulk so that we would provide them to the pharmacists and they would automatically give a Sharps container to anybody who didn't already state they had one.
That answered my thought. You know, I have not liked all of my life the fact that I can usually see both sides of every question, which leaves me then absolutely miserable trying to make a decision. However, if there are no other lights...
A couple more lights, Ms. Bianchi, and if you like an answer to your question, how often does CJAA meet, gentlemen? Once a month or...
Jerry Shea, District Attorney. We meet once a month on the second Wednesday of the month.
And has the task force met yet?
Yes, the subcommittee that's been working on this has met three times in the last couple of weeks, and I think we had a subcommittee of that group meet with Dr. Thomas, and I think one of those members was able to meet with Dr. Thomas.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Chairman Nasajian. For point of clarification, Dr. Thomas, for the pharmacy sales, people can buy up to 10 at any given time. Is there an exchange requirement there? Are pharmacies actually collecting used needles as well?
No, not. It's not part of the legislation, and some pharmacists who, in fact, the one pharmacist who was here last time we presented, who represents two pharmacies in town who have stood up and said we'd like to be involved, those two pharmacies, they do accept used syringes, but it is not, the legislation does not set it up as an exchange. It is a pharmacy sale of syringes.
Okay, thank you. And as I understand it from your explanation 3 weeks ago in your original presentation, that there is an educational component also that goes along with this through the pharmacies. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Ovid?
Thank you, Mr. Sargent. And I had a conversation with Dr. yesterday, and I met with law enforcement before that, but I still have concerns on the implementation, and my rationale for that is because what we have being presented to us is a very valid issue, but it's from the health perspective. And on that particular case, there is a valid argument. However, my disappointment in the implementation is that we're, one, contracting out with a private organization or a nonprofit to actually do the exchange program, and that our drug and alcohol basically becomes number crunchers. And I'm being very blunt, so... that's just what I feel, and I think that in this implementation that drug and alcohol needs a more active program because we have on one side the health issue, but on the other side we're here to try to reduce the use, get this disease off the street in any way we can. Well, the other two legs on this thing are probation, and I'm somewhat perplexed because in a needle exchange issue and a person's on probation and they're not part of probation is that they're not supposed to have paraphernalia, we're somewhat encouraging that violation of probation, and we have no way to check it up. And, of course, we've heard from law enforcement, which, again, is the other side, that we have to weigh the health benefit against the cost of putting up with the drug issues that relate to society. You're looking at two different laws, one, and neither one of them are a mandate. One of them allows us the permission to start these programs. And the one dealing with the pharmacy, in the implementation program, my issue here is that that's not an exchange with the pharmacies. Now, one says he'll volunteer to do it, but to get these off the street, the best thing to do is get them off the street. You know, we can give him or sell them needles and they just leave them laying around, even if, you know, I don't know, some of them will probably use Sharps containers, some may not. And the worst case issue is they may just take Sharps container and somebody may steal it and open it up and use the needles that are in it. So these are all worst case issues. But I think the point, if all we're doing this for so that we can report to the state or put the statistics together is how much we're trying to prevent it, that's not what we're here for. We're more inclined for prevention. The last time we looked at this, we said we wanted the law enforcement, we wanted health, and we wanted drug and alcohol and probation being part of law enforcement to get together to iron this thing out. And on both sides, I don't think there was that exerted of an effort to do it. And I've heard from other people to say maybe we need to put some time together and say this needs to have these people sit down and come up with this implementation. And I tend to agree with that because there's just too many holes in this thing as it is. I don't have a qualm about the issue of the health thing. I do have a problem of our involvement with the drug and alcohol and trying to get the prevention issue. And I do have a problem that the law enforcement has in trying to be able to react to an illegal use of substance. That's all.
Was that a question about how drug and alcohol would handle a warm handoff?
Well, Mr. Thomas, when we talked the other day, you informed me that drug and alcohol would basically, we will contract out and the contractor would report back to drug and alcohol on the statistics on this thing. And as I said to you, Mr. Thomas, and Marcia was there also, that I feel drug and alcohol has to have more of a hands-on issue with this and not be a secondary source. And this also relates to many of the other programs that we work through in drug and alcohol. Drug and alcohol is there for prevention, and it's there to actually try to reduce the issues of drug and alcohol involvement. This leads an open door, and I'm not satisfied with the presentation that I have at that particular role, nor am I satisfied with the law enforcement's slowness to get to this thing and try to find a solution. So I'm saying my acceptable issue here is that I think you sit down and get this done, and I have to see proof that you're all looking at it from the same table. And all these issues have to be addressed.
I'm sorry, I thought that was a question. But
No. This is not time for questions. It's supposed to be for comments. But
I'm going to go in this order that I have the lights, Ms. Bianchi, Mr. Patterson, and Mr. Lentol.
Well, I wanted to make a motion.
Okay,
I'll go last.
Okay, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. I do want to point out that I thought it was clear from the board's action 3 weeks ago that we wanted law enforcement to sit down with public health and work out an implementation program, and we're back 3 weeks later, and that still hasn't occurred, at least not to a level that has given us something that we can get concurrence on. But it was pointed out 2-3 weeks ago that we very likely won't get concurrence on this because in some instances it pits public health against public safety. And as Supervisor Bianchi pointed out earlier, sometimes it's difficult to choose between them. And I really don't think we have to in this case. I think there's enough on-the-ground evidence out there that these programs do work. And to coin a phrase that's often used in, you know, land use planning, we need to use every tool that's in the toolbox. And I would like to see us move forward with this. I talked with a gentleman just recently about this issue who's been involved in law enforcement for over a decade on both sides of the issue, from enforcement and then from rehabilitation, prevention, and treatment. And he said 10 years ago he probably wouldn't favor a program like this, but in the last several years he's been involved with the other side, and he thinks that programs like this are very, very beneficial, that they do have a positive effect on the community and do actually address the problem in a positive way, and that was very compelling for me to hear. At the same time, I don't want to undermine law enforcement's efforts to get on board with this and work out their concerns. I don't like the idea of extending this thing on and on and on and on. I'd like to see us get it on the ground, and I'd like to see a commitment from law enforcement to engage in this, and I think they've adequately expressed their concerns, and I would hope public health would address those in the formulation of the MOUs with the pharmacies. But I am supportive of it. I think we can implement it. I think we can work out the problems that law enforcement has with it. And we do have a problem in San Luis Obispo County. This isn't Shangri-La. And I don't want us to stick our heads in the sand and think that, well, drug abuse in San Luis Obispo County really doesn't exist. Hepatitis C, AIDS are insidious diseases. And, you know, if we can prevent those without exposing the public to a dangerous element in more needles on the street, which evidence has shown that this really doesn't do that, I think, you know, it's something that we should definitely pursue, because if we can save one life, then we've made progress here. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Lentil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I was the one that asked for the three-week extension when we were here, and I think it's important to remember that in the last 3 weeks, our law enforcement resources have been stretched fairly thin. We had three major high-profile cases, and although I'm also a little bit disappointed that there weren't more meetings or more opportunities for people to come together, I recognize that when you're dealing with crisis, when we had a major shooting and a pursuit and a barricaded subject all in a couple-day period, that I know what it's like to be on the other end. So I want to err on the side of caution here. Having said that, I think what's important is the two meetings that I was made aware of that they had and the one meeting that I believe our chief probation officer attended. In those discussions, there were additional questions and areas and concerns that were raised, and they weren't able to be resolved. So if that's what was taking place in two short meetings and they're still not resolved, it tends to lend me to believe that there's additional discussion that will make this a better program. I don't think there's a rush to get through this. I think the policy and procedures from the working person, and my heart goes out to the working people that do this, whether it's policies and procedures and pat-downs, whether somebody's on probation, they have needles, and there's not rules that are set in place, that it would be premature and inappropriate for us to put something in place just because we're trying to get a process resolved with the potential that we may lose funding later on. Having said that, what I'd like to see, and I believe Sheriff Hedges echoed this comment when asked about how long, is I would like to specifically see a panel, and I have five names of people that I have contacted, or that have actually contacted me to confirm that they will sit on this panel and say that this panel will work with the health department, drug and alcohol, and will come back no later than 6 months and give these people the opportunity to hammer out the specific policies and procedures that are going to be critical to the successful implementation of this program and any program. And when you have people patting needles down, when you have people on probation, when you have people in the jail and doing things, right now I think we have an opportunity to look at other programs, be that Ventura or other models, and say what works there, what is the best of that program that we can possibly extract and implement into our program so that we have a model program that other people will look at and say if this is the direction they want to go, that we've done the resource, that we will be a leader in addressing the issues of public safety, bridging some of the fences, and mending fences, rather, with the health department, because we all want to save lives. I don't think that's the question here. But how we go about doing that and what process and procedure we use are critical. And I don't think you can do that until you hammer out all the details, because this is not a simple thing. And I think back to my law enforcement experience, and oftentimes I was very reluctant when I saw something come down from Sacramento, and they really hadn't thought through all the little idiosyncrasies of this. This is an important tool. It is a tool. I agree with Supervisor Pattern. We should use every tool in our toolbox when it comes to public safety. But we have to train people in the use of those tools, and we have to ensure that it's the right tool, and we have to have a policy and procedure that gives the officers in the field, be they probation, be they correctional, be they custodial, be they parole or law enforcement on the street, the training to properly use the tools, and when ready, I'm prepared to make a motion.
We'll go to Ms. Bianchi, but there was a concern by Mr. Patterson about keep on continuing, but I also heard, I believe it was Mr. Shea or Mr. Hedges say the cap off whatever time we go to, so that will be the end of discussion, so to say, won't come back in whatever months we come back and say, well, let's go another 3 months, another 6 months. Ms. Bianchi, should I toss a coin between you and Mr. Lundholz, see who wants to make a motion?
I ask first.
And you're the queen. We'll listen what you have to say. You want him to go ahead?
Yeah. Well, I would move that we approve both the sale of syringes at the pharmacies and the needle exchange program, syringe exchange program. The second part is the most important, to get those things as quickly as possible off the street. So I would approve both of those, but with the stipulation that the goal is the close cooperation between public health and law enforcement. And I would give the implementation part of the motion no more than 3 months. Make people get their act together and get busy and get these things off the street.
I'll second that.
So for clarification purposes, we're coming back in 3 months?
Yes.
Okay, so in other words, we're extending for 3 months to come back with the implementation with the cooperation of the law enforcement. Now, as far as Mr. Lundholz's request and or
well, that
recommendation of having a panel,
that would be between public health and law enforcement.
Okay.
Mr. Sir.
And
I don't think we can mandate that.
Yes,
we can. I could add that to the motion that the panel be established.
Supervisor Ovid.
That's the comment I wanted to. I mean, the first part of the motion is basically Ms. Bianchi made was what we did 3 weeks ago and asked to come back on implementation. And I think now we're saying, okay, we're not really happy with what we saw coming back. What we want to do is to make sure that it gets done correctly. And I would duly respect the fact to let Mr. Lenthal make his recommendation. If it fits, then if he would make it as an amendment, that would be great. Because
I'll make it as an amendment.
I think it is behooving on us to make this thing move, and that's the way we would do it.
Mr. Lenthal?
With this, I'll amend it to my motion to include the panel Supervisor Lenthal is recommending, if this second would also agree.
Let's hear it one more time so the clerk has it clearly. And Mr. Lenthal, want to?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't finish, and I was trying to be brief, I guess, in the interest of time. The five members that I would like to see on this panel that have agreed to do this are our District Attorney, Jerry Shea, our Chief Probation Officer, Kim Barrett, Sheriff Pat Hedges, and Police Chief John Couch, and Police Chief Joe Cortez. And I guess hindsight being 2020, 3 weeks ago, I wish that we had those names so we could have some type of sweat equity attached to who was going to follow this through. I'm also sensitive, like I said, that there were a lot of things that happened in the last 3 weeks that stretched our resources pretty thin. The concern I have, and I would like to ask just on the 3 months versus 6 months, my preference would be that it be done prior to the end of 6 months and not put just a three-month cap on it right now to the motion maker, because I'm just not sure with all the things that are going on that that's enough time to study this. Hopefully we could get it done in three. I'd like to see it get it done in two. But to give adequate time, I would like to see this go up to 6 months.
Well, the reason I said 3 months is because it seems to me that 6 months is like a death with 1,000 cuts. You know, you can always come up with more reasons not to do something if you don't want to do it in the first place.
You know, I'll have a couple other lights, but something we can add to address Ms. Bianchi's concerns, that we can ask Supervisor Lenthal to run the show, and you can get the meetings called together in your office and bring it to us as you see it fit and make it happen.
So we'll give you that iron fist to bring the troops together.
I have no problem coordinating the meetings and having this done, but I do want to be reasonable, and when you're looking at the different agencies involved and the schedules involved, I would hate to shortchange ourselves, though, and say that we could do this in 3 months. I would like to think we could, but I think 6 months is a reasonable figure, and if we need some periodic update, I would certainly be willing and wanting to bring the information back to the board and also our listening public for people to know that where we're at any given stage as far as the status report.
Well, as we go forward with the names, we need somebody who's going to chair to be sure that that's the person going to call the meetings to order, going to have a place for the meetings and things of that nature. Let me go to all of the lines that came in order. Let me go to Supervisor Ovid. I come to you, Mr. Edge and Mr. Patterson.
Thank you.
Mr. Ovid.
The list you have, Mr. Lindthal, is commendable. However, I think you forgot to direct the other side of it. And what I'm saying here is that I think you can make your list be probation, the DA's office, sheriff, and Police Chiefs Association representing the law enforcement side of it. Probation, of course, would be there, but I think you also need to instruct the fact that drug and alcohol would be part of that panel and that public health be part of that panel, and that's the group you have. And, if you don't have time, I'll put it together because I did this thing when we did law enforcement, medical services. I don't have a problem. But I think the 3 months is plenty of time to do this, and where we have to be strong as a board is to say that's that group. And so if I could ask, is it maybe make that list probation, DA, sheriff, police chief, drug and alcohol, and the health department. And that's your panel. Now, they can set the representatives however they want to. The DA may send somebody from his office. I'm assuming the sheriff could even send somebody from narcotics task force. That should be left up to them.
And I agree with your comments. I was assuming that drug and alcohol and health were already there.
Well, assuming sometimes gets you in trouble, you know. And so if you want to make that as a motion that way, and
okay, let's review the motion again.
Yeah,
Before we go there, there are a couple other lights. Maybe we want to include them all in a final motion. With a possibility that we might go there. Let me go first and allow others to speak, then we'll come to Madam Clerk and see what kind of a motion we have in place. Just fruit for the thought that we have members of the public who have come here twice now and spoken. It doesn't hurt to bring in somebody from the public at large to be present at this function as well. And also, nothing stops us to have two supervisors if that's the case, because that's not a Brown Act violation. It's for the thought. So at this time, I will go to Mr. Edge, and I'll come back with to Mr. Patterson.
I guess I get the mundane staff question here, which perhaps can be clarified in the motion. What I heard Supervisor Lenthal say is a committee that will develop the implementation plan for this program. He then named five law enforcement representatives, and a couple of which were not county, were city employees. And from a staff perspective, I'd be concerned that this is a health program. Is it your board's intent to have a health program, the implementation plan of which will be developed by a committee of law enforcement, including two members of law enforcement who are not associated with the county, and the expenses and liabilities of the program that the county will be running?
May I comment to that?
Let me see if Mr. Edge, are you done? Or
yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Yeah. The way I was viewing this, as Mr. Lindthal described it, is that we had a panel representing law enforcement bringing their concerns on implementation to public health and drug and alcohol services to work those issues out. I think it's quite appropriate to have a representative from the city police chiefs as well, because they're going to be implementing that program also, and Chief Cassidy mentioned that their city has some specific concerns. So I think it's appropriate to have that representation on that committee. And, you know, so I don't have a problem with that personally. But again, I think it was a way of collectively bringing the law enforcement issues to public health to help work those things out. And my feeling on the timeline is that if we give them 6 months, they'll take 6 months. And this issue has been vetted so much already, and there's so many model programs in places in other parts of North America and Europe that we don't need to necessarily go through it page by page by page. We know what the issues are. They've been raised in two public hearings, and, you know, I think we could do it in short order, and we ought to get on with it.
Thank you. With that, Madam Clerk, would you attempt to combine all this discussion? Yeah, he was.
No, I think I can do it. Basically, the motion on the floor is the one that Supervisor Bianchi made, and that was to approve both the sales, the program, the sales at the pharmacy and the needle exchange program, with a stipulation that this there's supposed to be close cooperation with both the health department and law enforcement agencies, and that these programs are to be implemented in no more than 3 months. There was an agreement by Supervisor Bianchi to amend her motion to include the panel, which would be made up at the recommendation of Supervisor Linthal, of the district attorney, the chief probation officer, the sheriff, and Chiefs Couch and Cortez, and that's basically, she's agreed to that. The second did not agree to that yet, and there was some discussion about making this still go to 6 months. There was also some discussion about making Supervisor Linthal the leader of this panel, and that's where the motion is at this point.
And also the addition of the...
Well, yes, there was also some discussion by Supervisor Ovid to also add representation by Drug and Alcohol and the public health departments, but none of that has been included in the motion at this moment.
In order to come to a conclusion here, I'm going to go to Ms. Bianchi, even though your light is not on. To the follow-up, either yourself or...
The first part of the motion will stay the same.
Okay.
The second part will be to... I still keep it at 3 months. Let me rephrase that. To bring it back in 3 months for a report to the Board of Supervisors as to any one would hope progress that's been made. And I would agree with Mr. Ovid that the panel should be made up of
drug and alcohol and public
health. Including public health and drug and alcohol, because those issues can be resolved at the committee. You don't need to put this in the motion. The reason is, for the inclusion, that those issues can be dealt with on a staff level. They don't need to be brought here. What we want to know is the conclusion.
I want to make a clarification. One thing in the list that I did is I did not list the two separate police chiefs. I said Police Chiefs Association.
That's right, and I would agree with that. I said I agree with your motion.
You.
With the make
public health and drug and alcohol.
And I would agree that Supervisor Linthal should chair the panel.
Okay, so your first motion is in place, plus the amendment. Madam Clerk, are the amendments clear?
Yes.
Okay, does the second agree, Mr. Patterson?
Yes, I do.
Madam Clerk.
She's asking for a report to come back in 3 months. Did you want to give a date specific, or are you looking at...
You know, might I interject on that? Why not just say within 3 months? That way, if we get it done before that time period, it can come back to it, and the committee will get it calendared.
And we have the big guy to be done.
But it has to be done less than 3 months.
What has to be done within less than 3 months?
Report back on the implementation.
Well, my concern is if you don't give a date specific, you're going to not have any time on any agendas.
You still have to have it.
Okay.
Right.
Give us a date.
Give me a date, and I'll include it in the motion.
Probably the June 13th date.
Okay, we have a date.
I don't want a June 15th. I'm sorry.
June 13th.
Make it.
How about
June 15th would be fine.
13th.
Thank you.
13th.
13th would be okay.
In July, you won't be here.
June, I won't be here.
Will you be here June 13th?
Yes, I will.
Well, that's shorter than 3 months.
Back.
Well, I don't think so, is it?
A couple
couple of days.
March, by a couple of days?
Every week.
Okay, then how about June 27th or July 18th? Those are your other two choices.
Because March is gone, you have April, May, 2 months, and
July
18th.
July 18th. July 18th. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Are we clear? If
we're clear.
Motion makers,
and the second agrees.
I'll reluctantly second the July 18th.
With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Unanimous. We'll move on. Let me ask supervisors, do you want to, we have only one other item left. Do you want to have a short break and come back?
Yeah.
I guess so. Then it's 10:45. We'll be back at 11 o'clock.
Okay,
thank you. Thanks, Madam Clerk, for allowing me to start the meeting, restart the meeting. We're back, and next item is E1. Would Madam Clerk present item for us, please?
Item E1 is a review of county flood control policies, maintenance, and improvement efforts.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Good morning, Chairman Asagi and members of the board. I'm Noel King, Public Works Director. We're here today because after the storm event of January 1 and 2 of this year, we were asked to come back at a point about this time and discuss flood control policies and budget-related issues. Normally, Glenn Pretty would be doing this kind of presentation because he's kind of the county historian and most knowledgeable person on flood control issues. But
are you saying he's old?
We all are. But Glenn is in Washington, D.C. this week visiting his daughter in every museum he can find time to get to, so I have the pleasure of this. This morning there was some discussion about two attachments to this board item, attachments A and B, which were distributed late. I'm not really sure why they didn't get published with the agenda because they were submitted with the agenda. This isn't a public hearing, though. They were informational items, and so I don't think it really affects, you know, our going forward. The two items had to do with attachment A is a list of betterment projects that the county has done in the past 4 or 5 years relating to road right-of-way issues for flood control improvements. And attachment B is a list of projects that I'll discuss in a few minutes that we've requested in the next year's budget. And we'll have an overhead for that. So
my only question was if those attachments were, if were the public aware of them?
The only way the public would be aware of them would be if they saw the notice for the core agenda on Friday and came in and read them, and also we emailed out copies of the staff report to all the members of the Water Resources Advisory Committee.
Okay, because it, as you know, it's a sensitive issue, and I want to be sure that we all have all the information at all times. Thank you.
Our county has a long history of flooding. Because of our climate and topography, rainfall typically comes in a few large storms. The average rainfall varies throughout the county. When I was looking it up, San Luis Obispo averages about 22 inches per year, but since 1970, I think five different times, the rainfall in San Luis Obispo has been more than double that. So you can see we have a real variable rain pattern here. Storm damage is usually localized, as some areas are typically hit much harder than others when we have a major storm. There are two major types of flood control programs that we deal with here at the county, non-roads related and roads related. All non-roads related efforts are planned and carried out through the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. This is a countywide district that was formed in 1949. Your board is the governing board of that district as well as the governing board of the county. The district has two major purposes, for flood protection assistance and water resource development. The source of funding for the flood control district is pre-Proposition 13 countywide property tax allocation. In the current year, we get about $557,000. That's what we have to work with in this budget. And you should know that this amount is quite a bit less than we received in the past. Like, I think 3 years ago, we received 16% more than this, but because of shifts with the state taking tax dollars, this is one of the budgets that's been hit by that. The following services are provided by the Flood Control District: hydrologic data collection, general drainage study efforts, USGS-related analysis, water conservation management, RCD mobile lab evaluations, groundwater basin studies, advisory committee support. We deal directly with the Water Resources Advisory Committee, and coordination with local areas. This coordination involves working with citizens to help them understand and select projects, form zones of benefit, and hold elections to raise the necessary funding. It's important to note what's not on this list of services that the district provides. What's not on this list is that the district does not design and construct drainage improvements for the benefits of private property. And, you know, that's been the topic of a lot of conversation from time to time around the county. I want to make it clear, this district does not design and construct projects that benefit private property solely. Now, this practice is documented in a formal policy that was established in 1968. That policy declares that general taxes of the district pay for surveillance of potential flooding problems, initial planning efforts for improvement projects, zone formation assistance to property owners. Special assessments via zones of benefit pay for design and construction of improvements in operations and maintenance. There are several reasons for this policy being adopted by the board. First, the limited amount of general property tax that are money that is allocated to this budget. Secondly, in 1968, the board had pre-Proposition 13 taxing authority. There was a lot of concern among the taxpayers as well as the board members that the board not overtax people either from the county or from the flood control district, and so they felt it was important to lay out this policy. Third, the flood control district tax collection is countywide, and the Board of Supervisors did not want a small pocket of people benefiting from taxes paid by everybody in the county. And lastly, this policy is consistent with the general county budget policy, whereby special districts are not subsidized by the general fund. Now, here's a list of existing flood control zones of benefit that are flood control related. And here's a list of water supply-related zones of benefit that exist right now. There's been one notable exception to the 1968 policy, and that's in the current fiscal year. In this budget, your board allocated $150,000 from the flood control general budget to flood control zone one to pay for maintenance in that zone of benefit, and also to fund all the efforts that are necessary to work towards developing a local solution, including the election that you authorized this morning, that would where those people would be looking to raise an additional $350,000 from their local assessments. The other major flood control category is the roads-related program. These are some of the roads flood control tasks that our crews do each rainy season. We maintain culverts, ditches, and drainage basins, do storm patrol, debris removal, and road closures. These are typical roads-related flood control budget amounts. We went back and averaged the last few years. The budget has about $613,000 for drainage maintenance and an average of about $118,000 for drainage-related capital projects. With that money, we maintain 45 drainage basins, 4,400 culverts, hundreds of roadside ditches along the 1,320 road miles, and we do several minor improvements. Attachment A to the staff report shows a list of those minor improvements that have been done in the last couple of years. As everyone knows, the January 1 storm event caused significant damage in various parts of the county. In addition to our normal maintenance efforts this year, we've spent or will spend an additional $1,245,000 in the efforts relating to the storm event January 1st, and we estimate that we're going to be reimbursed about $963,000, so we have a net increased cost of about $282,000 this year that we basically are absorbing within our other maintenance programs. The next few slides are a quick reminder of the severity of that storm event. The first one's in Avila Beach. Napomo, Cambria, and Oceano. Now, it's impossible to do enough improvements to guarantee that flood damage will not occur in the county, but the first major step to solving many of the county's drainage problems was the 6-community drainage study that was completed in 2004. Scores of projects were documented with these rough cost estimates. The estimates in 2004 dollars to do significant drainage improvement projects not in the road right-of-way, $49 million, and the roads-related improvements documented in that study would be about $3 million. Now, that study cost the flood control district $800,000. It documented all citizen input. We went out in the communities, and we solicited input from anybody that would give it to us. Every comment that was made was documented in the study and responded to in some way. The study listed the preferred project solutions. It documented the environmental processes that would be involved. And it talked about funding options for doing those projects. And there were 3 town hall meetings held in each community as part of that study. For the most part, the public has not followed up on the study regarding needed projects. There have been some exceptions. We've had an ongoing dialogue in Santa Margarita about their needs, and I think that they've designated a project that they've set as a goal to work toward. We were recently approached by some members of the Napomo community, NCSD, as a matter of fact, saying that they'd like to cooperate with us with some funding and so forth. But really, not a lot of grassroots effort from the public following up that study. At the suggestion of Chairman Ashajian, 2 special budget requests have been included in the 06-07 budget relating to flood control. First is for the non-roads-related program. We've requested $200,000 per year in the general fund's special services budget. This will be dedicated to working with the public to identify special projects and get those projects through the Proposition 218 process. I would see this as being an annual need for a few years at least. However, if we don't use the money in the first year because of lack of really community interest at that point, we wouldn't ask for an additional sum the next year. We would just roll the money over and continue working with it. Secondly, in the roads budget, for roads-related project needs, we've requested the $3 million that was outlined in the 6-community study pertaining to projects in the road right-of-way. These projects will be funded by additional general fund contribution, and those projects are listed in Attachment B of your staff report. You had public comment this morning from 2 gentlemen, Mr. Morosky and Mr. Diaz. I think their comments actually pertain to this item more than the consent agenda. They were particularly concerned about some areas of Napomo that would be improved to a certain degree by the projects that we've listed in this $3 million list. However, depending on what's coming from upstream, as they mentioned in their comments, especially I think it was Mr. Diaz mentioned that, you know, a lot of the problems coming off of private property, and some of this is a private property matter, but certainly the study indicates that certain culverts need to be upsized, and that would be part of our program. Now, after we submitted the $3 million supplemental budget request, naturally the administrative office had several questions about it. One of the things they asked is that we provide some kind of a 3-year phasing plan with priorities to see if it would be more palatable to fund this over 3 years. This is how that breaks down. That looks a little hard to read, so I have hard copies for you. So, essentially, that will conclude my report on county flood control. policies, past efforts to reduce flood damage, and what we need budget-wise to enhance some of our efforts. Some of my staff are here to help answer questions if your board has any specific questions.
Thank you. What I would have liked, Mr. King, but I think I'll do that, so I would like a copy of this maybe given to Mr. Nguyen, because their willingness to partner with us as we go forward. If you'd like to receive one of those, Mr. Nguyen. And I'll have another copy made available to Oceano folks, and also Linda Chipping is with us here with RCD. I would like her to have a copy. I think your task force working with Zone 11A might find some interesting items here that for your information. Yeah. And we'll pass on to Ms. Chipping. And okay, seeing no comments, questions, from supervisors, I want to thank you for bringing this forward, especially the $3 million is how we can spread it countywide and have entire county benefit from this. My desires are to start addressing the issues rather than wait for the rain and get flooded, get sued, and respond that way. This is what I call preventive medicine. With that, Mr. Edge.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. One of the directions that we would seek from your board today is how you want to proceed on the additional general fund support request that Noel outlined under our existing budget policies. As he indicated, he included it as a request. Under existing budget policies, we wouldn't include that as a recommended expenditure. That would require a change in policy. And so to the extent that your board is interested in moving those projects forward, then if you could give us some indication of that as a board today, then we could interpret that as a change in policy and include it in the recommended budget and adjust the one-time expenditures in the budget accordingly.
Thank you.
If you would give us, I'm sorry. If you are interested in doing it, and I'm not advocating one way or the other, if you are interested in doing it, our view would be that it would be the better approach to appropriate the $3 million this year rather than use the phased-in approach over 3 years of appropriating a million, a million one, a million, and a million. We don't know what the future may hold, and if you're going to commit to the program, my view would be it's better to do it now when you have some positive revenue outlook for at least the next 12 months, because you don't know what situation you're going to be in 12 months from now or 24 months from now.
My preference, of course, to extend the money as long as we can, but because of problems we've been having for the number of years that at least I've been in office and the stories I heard prior to that, I will strongly support that we have this money available to the public works and their itemized areas there. They've seen the need and spend it. They don't have to spend it all in 1 year, but I like to make it available to them at a one sum and move forward with that. But let me go to other supervisors for their comments, and I'll open it up to the
public. I'll have some comments after the public
okay.
comments.
Okay. Mr. Edge, did you want to add anything else to that?
Just a couple. I probably anticipated what Noel would say, that they can't do them all at once. They would be, but setting the money aside commits to, and as the money then earns interest within its own accrual, it provides funding that should take care of the projects as Noel outlined them. I do have to add that, as your board wrestles with it every budget season, to the extent you take $3 million from the pot and put it in here, that's $3 million less that you have available for other projects that are a pressing need too. You've identified your interest in parks. You have a women's jail expansion that's needed that would soak up all the available money we have. And so I don't want to give the impression that you have a free lunch on this one.
I understand what you're saying, but I also understand that we were lucky last time we got sued that it was considered a one flood happening. We were stuck with the 250. Otherwise, we would have spent that with a different lawsuit that we settled. We would have spent over $3 million. And that's my fear, that if we're going to spend it in paying fines, I'd rather put it to work and get some results. But I appreciate as where you're coming from, and thank you for that comment. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. King, I had the same question that Mr. Edge just raised, and that is appropriating all the money at once. It's doubtful that all that work could get done in 1 year. I suspect that's probably the case, but I have a question regarding the prioritization of these. How were they prioritized, and if you could explain that.
Yeah, they were prioritized by me asking Glenn Priddy. But he did give me his basis for his recommendations, and there seemed to be some good basis for it. It's a combination of the work we've been doing the last couple of years, this property damage that we've determined that we could get to most quickly would be most beneficial, and also there's a couple of projects that are already in the works in the preliminary stages, one in San Miguel and one in, I think the other one in Cambria or Cayucas, I forget which it is, that we've started on those projects, but we don't have enough money to proceed, and it would be expeditious if we got the funding to complete those, because they also are, there's other funding involved that are coming into play. We want to leverage this with other money. So it was a combination of what we thought we could do the most public benefit, the most, the first year especially, with some demonstrated areas that are really having some problems, and then secondly, working with programs where we have other money involved that we're leveraging are the highest priority projects. And from then on, I trusted the judgment of our road foreman feeding up information to Glenn to give me what they figured were the highest priorities in their mind.
Okay, thank you. And regarding the actual expenditure of these funds, you've set out a three-year program here. Could you accelerate that if the money was available, or what's your feeling there?
Yes, we could. I've learned in the last month or so, that one benefit of getting all the funding now would be we could consolidate the permit applications, because the process is going to be somewhat similar for all of them, and we could get that off the ground. And we're probably going to have to come up with some kind of a mitigation effort for some of these projects because of the streams they're in. We could probably, if we had all the money appropriated, we could come up with a better effort of mitigation by consolidating the funding from different projects. We could probably come up with something more meaningful. So that would be an advantage. The other advantage to doing it all at once would be we're undergoing severe inflation right now on our road construction costs. The estimate is based on the 2004 dollars, so we're already a little bit behind, and I'm kind of anticipating we're probably going to have to make up any shortfalls out of our maintenance budget as we get into these projects because of that. Delaying the thing over the next few years is going to cost more money, and so we will adjust our resources to do the best we can to get these projects built right away. But the time frame for these projects, I've got to tell you, is like 14 to 18 months because of the permitting. There's no way they can really be done much earlier than that. So if you appropriate the money for this purpose in July, we're going to be rushing to beat the 2007 winter rains to get them done. That's going to be our goal.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Patterson, if I can jump in here for a second. By giving you some kind of a green light today, you can go after the permits as we speak. So when the money becomes available, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah, depending on the type of direction that you provide, we would start working on the permits today.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson, were you done?
For now.
Okay, thank you. Do you have anything else to add, Mr. King, before I go to public? Thank you. We'll go to the public at this time. Mr. Wynn, followed by Linda Chipping.
Good Good morning, Mr. Chair, board members. My name is Michael Wynn, and I'm speaking as the chairman of the Water Resource Advisory Committee to you today. Most of us live in communities that were founded close to running water. People didn't want to carry it any further than they had to. And your staff worked very hard to make up for the long-term consequences of paving over so much land so close to narrow streams. Many times we go decades without any flooding incidents, but when they happen, they can be pretty catastrophic. And you've seen some of those in Napomo, other communities. I know Santa Margarita is very much like ourselves, Cambria and others. We have got a lot done. Your staff not only worked hard, they've worked smart. And the studies are in place already on which we can go out for grants and other such things, and you know we would not get such monies if we didn't have those studies in place first. I do ask for a couple of things. One, I hope you will work closely with the community service districts. As of January 1st this year, state law completely rewrote what CSDs can and cannot do. We no longer have to go back to our residents and ask them to add powers to the list. We have all of the powers now latent, including flood control. Now, yes, it has to show funding, and LAFCO has to activate them, but those are now latent on the books for all of us. And so I think we're a little freer to go into joint powers agreements with you now than we were even a year ago, when we did not have any police powers, and we didn't have the power to exercise anyway. So I hope you'll look to us as partners in this effort. Secondly, I really encourage you to add yet one more string to the fiddle, and that's code enforcement. Many of the problems that we have are caused by code enforcement being understaffed and not able to catch all of the detention and retention basins that are illegally filled in, structures that are built on in flood zones illegally, a number of things like that. And I'm hoping that you'll help us to catch those and remedy those over time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. As you know, we met with you and Mr. Verheiling and Land Conservancy and Public Works with the entire focus was how we can work together and what other fundings we can collectively go after. And that's the purpose that I want you to have a copy. Maybe you'll take it to Community Service District for some input from them as well.
I will do that.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. Chipping, followed by Mr. Greening. Ms. Chipping, give me a second here. Something is happening, and
here we go.
I can start. Okay, thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Linda Chipping, and I am the president of the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District. As noted in your staff report, we're very grateful for the $150,000 which was provided to the RCD on behalf of 11A to do the alternative study. I believe the staff report indicated it was $180,000. I don't want to have to be accountable for that $30,000. So it's 2 points. Regarding the staff report, and to follow up with one of the points that Michael Wynn made, and that is that looking at in the future, in the broad picture of things, perhaps in terms of flood control and policy issues, that we look at the current county pre- and post-construction ordinances and policies that we do have, make sure they're effective, make sure they're adequate, and make sure that they're positively enforced. The second point is noted in the staff report on the first page where it states that much depends on how a specific storm affects a specific watershed. And that leads me to hope that your board will recognize the importance and the wisdom of addressing flood control from the watershed perspective. To paraphrase, I think it's a law of physics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And my most concrete example of that is having worked in 11A, where our study pointed out that in 1955, the Arroyo Grande Creek could handle a 100-year storm event, of 7,500 cubic feet of water per second. And at today in 2005, a 100-year event is almost double that at 19,200 cubic feet a second. Part of that is due to the incredible development that occurred in the upper watershed, which leads to a lot of impervious surfaces so that water drains more quickly and flows faster. The velocity is greater. There are numerous jurisdictions, political boundaries in that watershed. Water knows no boundary when it comes to a political entity. So I encourage you to look at working on these issues with approaches that would involve all of the jurisdictions involved and look at it from the watershed perspective and not just isolated by community. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening?
I'm Eric Greening, and I think the previous two speakers have raised excellent points. I also appreciate the informative presentation and all the work that's gone into this. Flooding occurs at any point in a watershed where runoff and stream flow arrive too quickly and leave too slowly. Much of the emphasis today is on getting the water to leave these places more quickly. That's understandable. Many of the county's facilities, such as culverts, are potential bottlenecks to the drainage of water, especially when clogged with debris. But we need to recognize that moving water out of one place more quickly creates a potential for greater flooding problems downstream, and a balanced approach recognizes that swifter movement of water is not always what we want to achieve. There's a kind of a popular sense that if you just get the vegetation out of the creeks, they will drain quicker and will have a more efficient system. And I think the people that are working on the watershed-based approaches are recognizing that it's much more complicated and our vision needs to be more sophisticated than that. And for that reason, I think that one of the real elements in prioritization of the funding is where an ongoing or completed watershed assessment, such as the one that Ms. Chipping's group is working on, is part of the process, that should have funding priority over essentially trying to put out fires, in this case put out floods, on a sort of here's a problem, let's see if we can do something about it basis. I also very much agree with Mr. Wynn in reminding us of the impact of hardscaping and, you know, roofs and pavement on accelerating flow and also on the need for the code enforcement aspect, policing our detention basins, retention basins, and certainly along with Ms. Chipping on just how construction is happening. I also think we do need to, in the long-term perspective, recognize that our best bottomland soils are places where flooding has recurred regularly to distribute that sediment. Sediment being deposited in places is a tremendous inconvenience in the built environment and for production agriculture, but past deposition of this sediment is at the root of the best soils for production agriculture that we have today. We need to find a way to work with and accommodate those natural processes. And one way to do so and also encourage riparian mitigation and restitution is to remember the effectiveness of things like the Choro Flats, where you slow the velocity, move the water and the sediment off stream, which removes flooding problems downstream, but at the same time have robust riparian habitats created, as well as tomorrow's best agricultural soil. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Something Mr. Chipping said that Arroyo Grande have taken a active movement towards it in their planning department, that they now require further setbacks if you're building close to creeks, which is something I think makes a lot of sense, and we need to look into it as we move forward with our planning policies and principles. Seeing no other request to speak, we bring it back to the supervisors. Ms. Bianchi?
Yes, thank you. It's the Water Conservation and Flood Control District, so we've heard about flood control
and flood mitigation. I want to bring it up to water supply as well, water conservation. And flooding of the creeks, particularly in the coastal areas in the North Coast, when that sedimentation and erosion comes down the creek, it inhibits recharge of our local aquifers. And so the water supply is actually lessened. And my suggestion was going to be, because it's the Water Resources Advisory Committee, that somehow, and I would look to the Water Resources Advisory Committee to come up with some suggestions and recommendations on how we can get county planning, because I talked about this yesterday with Mr. Holanda, so I told him what I was going to bring up, and he didn't scream and yell at me, planning, you know, Public Works takes care of the flooding after it happens, or as it's happening, with the culverts, et cetera, et cetera. But planning has the responsibilities to see to it that the, well, not to see to it, but to come up with recommendations for what occurs in the watersheds. And so I would look to the RAC, if possible, to help us out with that, how the two agencies work together for both flood control and water conservation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Supervisor Ovid?
Yeah, I think one of the things Noel probably didn't bring up, and one of the cost factors now, is that the rules and regulation for drainage has changed immensely in what you can allow to go downstream. And in many cases, the types of drainage that we used to just let run off now cannot be done. It has to be captured and filtered and whatever else has to be done under this. The MPE, I can't ever say it right.
That's right.
But, you know, these are cost factors. I know, like, the Sam McGill project, we're going to have to be looking at that. I just want to bring it up because I don't think it was mentioned as part of this thing, and it's going to be part of every project that comes forward.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of giving direction to staff on how to proceed from here and taking a look at this proposed three-year plan, I want to echo some of the issues that Mr. Edge raised, and that this would be a change in policy and how we've done things in the past. I'm well aware of the issues of escalating costs for infrastructure and our need for infrastructures, but I know we also have a lot of other needs in the county too, and to take $3.5 million out of the general fund to set that aside means it isn't available for public safety or updating our general plans, which also need to be done. Public health issues we have. Harry mentioned new stormwater regulations that are coming into play, and Mr. Greening mentioned watershed planning, more comprehensive approaches to look at these things. And so, you know, I could see moving forward with the implementation of a one-year plan to get those things that are already in progress completed and get them done as quickly as possible. But I think we need to look at the big picture of drainage in the context of all the other needs that we have in the county. And one thing that we're doing, recognizing that we not only have infrastructure needs and flooding and drainage issues, but also in roads and water supply and all the rest of that, that all needs to be done comprehensively and holistically. And we're currently looking and investigating, and we've asked our staff to come back to us with ideas for infrastructure financing that may give us an edge in getting some of these things done without encumbering general fund monies over the long term. And Mr. Wynn mentioned that the Napomo Community Services District is now in a position to help with getting drainage and flooding issues dealt with in their community. And I think that we ought to engage the local communities also in dealing with these issues. So I wouldn't support changing policy to the extent of approving a three-year plan. At this point, I would support doing it incrementally and looking at it a year at a time.
The reason I support that 3-year, and as much as Nipomo Community Service District want to help us, but when we get sued for flooding issues, we get sued and not NCSD. And I'm very sensitive of other needs that we have within the community, but we will spend this $3 million one way or the other as we get flooded, and those are areas known to be flooded, and we are have a set of precedent that we do get sued and we settle, and lots of money are paid out, and I'd rather see that money paid into some constructive way of showing the trust between the community and ourselves that we're doing something to prevent flooding. Mother Nature will always do its thing, but still such time that we have shown proof that we are doing what's available for us, that trust level is not going to be there. And if we don't do what needs to be done today, tomorrow is more expensive. $3 million 3 years from now is going to look very cheap. So that's why I'm very strongly supportive. And often we hear, and no fault to the men and women that work for Public Works, that we don't have money. And this is why I ask Public Works, bring this issue to us and let us take the blame. If we're not going to give money, then you can have the right to say we asked you for it and you didn't give us the money. That way, if I don't support it, I deserve to take the heat publicly, because those of us who have the flooding problems within our backyards, it's a different story than those who might not experience it as badly as we do. So I hope that the 3-year plan does get its support as needed. We're not going to get to the general fund and take that money overnight, but it will give the right for the Public Works to move forward with getting the permits in place, knowing that this money is available as the permits. Might take us 3 years to do the job, but 3 years from now or next year, it can be a totally different story. We need to have this money put aside today to be used by Public Works for the benefits they spelled out in front of us as presented. Would that, Ms. Bianchi?
No, thank you. I changed my mind.
Mr. Ovid?
Yeah, I support basically what Katja's saying, and I do it for a couple of different reasons. One is our financial management over the vast number of years has wavered a lot of storms. And we've been able to do that because we've taken some of our capital improvements and we've pushed them off to the side. And I think at this particular point, I look at it as investing back into our own entity. And I know I've talked with Mr. Edge, and I'm going to bring it up again to him, that there's a lot of mechanisms where we can utilize our own capital and even pay ourselves back to do it with today's dollars instead of waiting till tomorrow. And a lot of times, just as you see these increase in dollars for capital improvements and concerning freeways or roads or streets, had we been able to put the money aside earlier to pay for them then, you know, we'd have paid with them a lot less dollars. So I think on that behalf, that I look at it as an investment into the future, and I think that we shouldn't ignore the fact that there are other mechanisms that we can look at to offset some of these things, like we can do our own increment financing and other things like this. We can be creative because we have the capital to do that. But I disagree that if we wait till the day we build it and we don't invest the money today, it's going to cost us more and we lose in the long run.
Hold on, Mr. Robert.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Like a future supervisor, I do quit when I breathe. Yeah.
Okay. Supervisor.
Not supervisor, I mean. Yeah.
Supervisor Lentil, followed by Supervisor Bianchi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say a couple things, and then Supervisor Owens stole, I think, some of my thunder as far as the financing. This is an investment. This is something we need to do. I echo your comments as well. And I think there's times when you have to look at things and say, maybe there is a better way to do things based on past experience. And we have an opportunity here to, I think, make a difference and get better value. And I agree with you.
Supervisor Bianchi?
I would like to have Mr. Edge once again review the policy that's in place and what the ramifications would be if we don't follow it, for clarity's sake.
Okay. The basically, our existing policy would mean that we would not, at the administrative office level, we would not recommend in our proposed budget this kind of additional one-time expenditure. The ramification, however, as I said, I think that if your board is inclined to do it, and with due respect to Supervisor Patterson, I think if you're inclined to do it, then given our current financial situation, it would be a wiser financial move to set aside the $3 million now than plan on phasing it in for the reasons that were outlined in terms of the particularly significant cost inflators that the roads business is experiencing and has been experiencing for the past few years. And I think Noel indicated we've no reason to suspect those inflators are going to slow down. As you see from his handout, they plan on about 20% a year cost inflation on any given project, and that might even increase. So the ramifications of these, I guess, and if we get down to the reality, it's a lot easier for you as an elected body to make a choice to spend money when you're discussing a single good cause. It's more difficult when you are in a budget setting and you're discussing 35 good causes. As I said, without wanting to be too cliche, there is no free lunch to the extent that you take $1 million or $3 million out of the pot today. That's that much less money that you have to balance out the competing needs come June. And as you know, you're at least aware, if not of the full details, you know that there are some significant competing needs. This is not money that I would want you to trade off against the potential cutbacks in mental health, because those are ongoing cutbacks. Those are ongoing financial requirements. This, what we're talking about here, is a one-time capital investment. However, on the capital investment side, as you know, there are the women's jail could basically eat up all of the available capital project money we potentially have. So if you balance this off against that, you're saying that this would be $3 million of additional money we'd have to go out and borrow to help finance a jail expansion when we get to that. It just comes down, there's no magic to it. It's essentially what the five of you, or at least a majority of you, view as the priority needs of your constituents, and you have to prioritize. It's the nature of the business that you're in, and that isn't going to change.
Thank you, Mr. Ridge. Anything else, Ms. Bianchi?
Well, thank you very
Mr.
much.
Mr. Patterson?
Well, just to repeat what I said earlier, or summarize it, I think it's good to invest the money when you have it. I'm just concerned that we aren't taking a comprehensive look here. We could take any issue and apply this philosophy to it and invest in it, but I think we need to be more comprehensive. I mean, nobody knows better than me the problems with flooding. I spent half a day New Year's Day wading through homes in Santa Margarita that had flooded and have been flooding for several years now, and I'm always told we don't have the money to address it. And I would love to put some money in that, but I'm told we don't have it. I don't see it here on this list. And, you know, I think we need to just be a little bit more conservative in our expenditures until we have an opportunity to take a comprehensive look at what all the county's needs are. I know the value of investing in infrastructure, and I know every day we wait, it costs us more. I know we defer it oftentimes, but I have to say that, you know, we built ourselves into this problem. And, you know, we weren't thinking about some of the things that Harry, Supervisor Ovett mentioned earlier, you know, when we were authorizing projects to go forward and that sort of thing. We need to change our thinking about how we deal with some of these issues and the long-term consequences of them and share the cost of that. And I'm ready to move forward with, you know, I mean, it's great to have a long-range plan. I believe in doing that, and I think we ought to have a long-range plan, and we ought to revisit it annually, but fund it annually and weigh it against
the other needs that the county has. So I can't support setting all that money aside currently for 3 years, because next year our needs may change and we don't have the money because we've encumbered it for something else.
Supervisor Bianchi, then Supervisor Lento.
Well, we do have a long-range plan for at least six communities that Public Works put together about 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Lento.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there's no further discussion, I'm going to make a motion with the comment that when none of us have a crystal ball and we look at long-term financing or future debt, when we have 20 and 24% increase in construction costs, that I think it's reasonable to expect that if we can get something done in today's dollars, even if we have to borrow whatever future interest rates, that we're making a better investment, not only in our community, but using the taxpayers' money wisely. Therefore, I would make a motion that we set aside the $3 million and direct staff to continue with that project.
The motion by Supervisor Lentil, seconded by Supervisor Ovid. I'm sorry, Mr. Edge, under discussion.
Seem to be second-guessing Supervisor Lentil's motions today. Do you want to, is your motion to set aside $3 million right now, which would be a four-fifths move from contingency type of formal exercise by the board, or would you perhaps prefer to make a motion to direct Noel to move ahead on the permitting, indicate your intent to move forward with these programs, and then we will include the $3 million in the proposed budget that you will consider in June, which would be a 3-2 vote.
Which one did you?
I'm assuming that we were going to do it through the budget process.
Okay,
that's correct.
But again, assuming you can get you in trouble.
No, I should have made that more clear. Thank you.
We'll get you trained, yet, Jerry.
Okay, this requires a voice vote.
Okay, so you did amend your motion to be Mr. Edge's motion.
I don't make motions, Madam Secretary.
Suggestions.
He just clarifies it.
Mr. Lenthal wants to use Mr. Edge's language in his motion.
Let me ask this question, Mr. Edge. If the motion is as you recommended, does that give enough insurance to Mr. King to move forward?
We're willing to risk it, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. King?
He's smiling.
I don't want him to come to my office and say you didn't do this.
We'll start working on permits based on what I've heard.
Okay. Okay, thank you. With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
It's 4-1. Next item on our agenda is closed session. Any word of wisdom, Mr. Leno?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have no need for a closed session today.
Okay.
We won't have to have a public report either.
Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on a closed session that will not take place? Seeing none, bring it back to the board, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Will you have a chance to talk to Noel Baker, Santa Maria?
Well, I mean, I've talked to him over here. This is going to be a long session.
I wish that was added to it.
Well,
sorry, it wasn't.
I mean, I know there's other flooding problems out there, and I just don't know that it's really. That's why I asked him how the priorities were determined, because, you know.